right. Well, thanks y'all for hanging in there. I know it's getting late Tuesday evening, so I appreciate you being here and listening. We are going to talk today about what's really the culmination of about 10 years of work on establishing Houston's first environmental health clinical service. Back in 2002, there was a community town hall meeting in which a number of members of the community came together from various sectors, including elected officials, to talk about environmental health concerns in the Houston region. And following that, the community ended up ranking the establishment of environmental health services, environmental clinical services for children as their number one priority. And so over these last 10-plus years, there's been the environmental health section at Baylor College of Medicine has been involved in a number of community initiatives and professional education. And just recently, we have established our first environmental health clinics. So there have been a number of, you know, we thought maybe at this point we would have, you know, we have some great lessons to share, which we do. But I think there's also been a number of, challenges along the way that I thought I would share as well. So, I should say also, so I've been at Baylor for a couple of years, which was in 2012 as part of a legal settlement. We were able to negotiate a portion of the fine, which is actually the Chevron Phillips Chemical Company, a portion of the fine helped to establish this environmental health clinical initiative, which really, you know, was a big boost to our program, so we could really launch, you know, is a much bigger effort, this environmental health clinical initiative, and expand our services, our professional education in environmental health. Okay, so I have nothing to disclose. And so this is just a roadmap. We'll first talk generally about our efforts to kind of build knowledge and capacity of environmental health in the region, and then go through the steps of what we did to establish the clinics, our model, and then talk a bit about the lessons we've learned so far. Okay, so you know, part of getting buy-in for the clinics has involved and continues to involve educating clinicians about the importance of environmental health. So we've worked to expand efforts to, you know, broaden the definition of environmental health or what people think of as being part of environmental health. And you know, as many of you may know, most medical schools offer little or no training in environmental health, and that's certainly true at Baylor, at least when you think of environmental health narrowly. And so that's something that we have gotten quite involved with, and also working with you know, clinicians and future clinicians and other healthcare professionals on, you know, the role of the exposure history. And so this is an ATSDR. They've noted that few physicians routinely elicit information about the home, the workplace, community environment as part of the demographic and social history. And so this type, leaving this information out, leads to inaccurate or delayed diagnoses, inappropriate treatment, and to continued exposure. So, you know, clearly there's a tension, you know, in a short 15, 30, or 45-minute, you know, visit with your doctor. There's not a lot of time to go through an extensive history, but there are some key questions that can have a really powerful effect. So we, as part of our professional education efforts, have been you know, working to integrate environmental health into some components of the medical school. Working with fourth year medical students. We've done some grand rounds, have done some toxic tours as well for members of the healthcare community and also at Rice University. And then we're also working to expand. There's a program in which pediatrics residents, as part of their community health rotation, actually do an exposure history and then go out into the home with the city of Houston to do a lead investigation, which I think has been also a really powerful tool. Okay, so, you know, for clinicians, it's important to frame environmental health in a way that's, you know, convincing. Quotes, you know, well-regarded professionals, you know, cite, you know, peer-reviewed evidence. And so that's, you know, something that we've tried to do, especially in the context of our framework and our intervention, which I'll get into in a minute. You know, papers such as this, is, you know, it's really, you know, powerful. For example, this one, the CDC Task Force on Community Preventive Services, is based on 23 studies, made an analysis, and showed strong evidence of the effectiveness of a home-based multi-trigger environmental intervention, reduced symptom days, improved quality of life, reduced school days missed, and then also it was for every dollar spent, it saved a significant amount of money. And so this sort of, these sorts of papers and data is, obviously something that we rely on a great deal. And it's something that, as we work to open a clinic, this is what especially healthcare administrators want to see. In addition, as we started, this idea, really launching the clinical initiative, we didn't have a lot of data. We didn't have a lot of outcome data. We used what data we do have from, Texas Children's Hospital and within our own institution, and then used the AHRQ return on investment calculator to develop some projections of what we believe the benefits will be of the intervention that we are now doing, which I'll, again, share a little bit more about in just a moment. And then finally, we are, I think with the Affordable Care Act also comes an opportunity, and so we work to, frame environmental health, within this new framework, which is rethinks healthcare delivery, shifting the focus on sickness and disease to one based on wellness and prevention. And as I'm sure, many of you have, been to some other sessions here that really emphasize the importance of place, and that's, especially true in Houston, which is, the center of much of our petrochemical industry in the United States, and there are certainly communities that are especially impacted. And, also as part of our mandate under the settlement to address, those that are underserved, and especially in the Ship Channel community, which is heavily impacted by the petrochemical industry. So now just going through what we've done over these last couple of years in order to establish the clinics. We've reassessed the community needs. We've talked to many, many, many different people, both within our institution, others within the medical center, members of the community. We have an advisory board. We have, in order to, to determine kind of what the community resources are and where the major holes are and what we can do, how we can best utilize this amazing resource we have and really serve an unmet need. We've also looked at a number of other models, Kansas City, Case Western, Western Michigan, and a number of others that aren't listed here. I've spoken to contacts from many of the PESUs, the Pediatric Environmental Specialty Units as well, to get there. Everyone's been amazingly forthcoming and really helpful in sharing their lessons and kind of what they see as the, the opportunities and also obstacles in creating something like this. And all along, sustainability is, although we have funding, essentially startup funding, we always have to keep an eye towards, how we're going to, what we establish, and want to make sure we can keep it going. And certainly that's been something as we meet with administrators within Baylor, within the Harris Health System. They want to know, they want to make sure that this isn't going to shut down a year or 2 years from now and make sure we have a plan. And so we've developed detailed financial models in terms of costs and how we're going to get income and the cost savings that we might anticipate. And so this is obviously very complicated because it's, it's difficult to find out some of this information. It's difficult to know. especially in a changing environment with Medicaid reimbursement changing and other things changing, and also specific to the financial model at Baylor Clinic, for example, which is where we had first planned to have our clinic located. It's a fee-for-service model and in which everyone must essentially have insurance in order to be seen there, and versus the Harris Health System, which is a community, which is the safety net clinics, basically. It's the Harris County is where the county in which Houston is located, and what used to be the Harris County Hospital District, now Harris Health, has a network of clinics and hospitals. And the Harris Health System is staffed by Baylor College of Medicine physicians and UT physicians, so that's why it was kind of a natural place, a natural fit, we felt. And so We met with numerous administrators from Harris Health and others to develop buy-in and eventually, you know, set up referral pathways. So met with Harris Health, our department, Baylor Internal Medicine, met with asthma specialists, family and community medicine, the other hospitals in our area, other academic institutions, including UT School of Public Health. MD Anderson has a really strong health disparities program, so we've partnered with them, as well as really good expertise in community-based participatory research. So we're partnering on that as well. We have established a patient stakeholder advisory board. I've also met with some of the insurance company. Community Health Choice is the insurance company, or it's the major, one of the two major Medicaid managed care plans in our area. It's also affiliated with the Harris Health System. Then there's the Texas Children's Health Plan, which is the other major Medicaid managed care plan, at least for kids in our area. And we also work closely with the Houston Department of Health and Human Services and the Harris County Public Health and Environmental Services, and advocacy groups, in particular Air Alliance Houston, American Lung Association, CHI. So there have been many, many details that we've had to figure out along the way, including, for example, you know, negotiating the space and figuring out who's going to pay for what, the front desk, who's going to make appointments. So it's a growing staff. So we have two part-time positions, a nurse practitioner, a community health worker, an administrator. And so there's been a lot of negotiations with the Harris Health System about how, you know, again, who's going to do what? Who does the billing? Who's going to take blood, et cetera? And with this, we've had to figure out issues of reimbursement. We have developed so at Baylor and in Harris Health, we use the Epic electronic medical record system. And so we are now listed as environmental health as a specialty service within the Harris Health Epic system. So that means that physicians in the clinic can just search for environmental health, or there are a few other keywords they can use, and they can make referrals electronically that way. It also provides an easy way for providers for communication with referring providers, coordination of care, and then the sharing and standardization of patient education materials. Something that's, you know, taken a great deal of time and effort has been developing our instruments and as well as our outcome measures. And we have, we've also most recently been working with several other cities, including Seattle, Chicago, New York, to share some of the instruments that we're using and trying to standardize a bit across these cities so that eventually we might be able to, compare some of our data. We've also built a separate data system. We quickly learned that we were gathering a whole lot of information, and Epic is not going to be a good way to keep it. So with our bioinformatics group, we've created an internet-based system to keep our field data as well as some of the other data. We have tablet apps that we use or will be using in the field, and so that data will also go into that web-based system. And again, just more details of all. There are just numerous steps that had to fall into place in order to get these clinical services going, including hiring and training personnel. Harris Health System and Baylor has, you know, their own human subjects training, the HIPAA training, the EPIC training, and we also, in addition, added healthy homes and asthma education, motivational interviewing. We've, you know, purchased equipment, supplies. And so now just a little bit more about exactly what we're doing. So we have two clinics. Both are within the Harris Health System, which, again, as I mentioned, is essentially the safety net system for Houston. And the pediatric clinic, it's the Pediatric and Adolescent Health Center in Pasadena. So that clinic is open on Tuesday mornings. That started back in April. And then just this week, actually, we're opening the adult clinic at Smith, which is the specialty clinic for the Harris Health System. And that is open on Thursday mornings. In addition, we have a research project that is just beginning enrollment this week. So that is a major focus of the adult clinic. And so we'll be enrolling 300 African-American adults with poorly controlled asthma and doing a randomized clinical trial looking at the effectiveness of a home-based environmental intervention. So the target populations for both these clinics are poorly controlled asthmatics. And also, so the pediatric clinic really grew out of what had formerly been a lead clinic. It has kind of expanded and changed a bit, but so at that clinic we continue to see kids with lead poisoning and partnering with the city or county to then go out into the home and do an investigation. And this is where we integrate some of the medical, the residents, which we hope to expand further. But then it also, at either of these clinics, we have seen patients suffering from other adverse health effects that may be exacerbated or caused by environmental exposures. So we have our referral guidelines both in Epic and on our website. So typically, when someone comes to the clinic, you know, they're referred via Epic or paper. We do an extensive environmental health exposure history, which we've developed, but based on materials we've, gathered from other places and expanded. And then do additional lab tests, such as, allergy testing is needed. And then we do, if warranted, a field-based exposure assessment. So using Healthy Homes, the Healthy Homes-based model, and take some measurements, and then based on what we find, develop an action plan and a home-based intervention, which is patient-centered, and we provide supplies and referrals to other resources, and then follow up over the course of a year. This intervention takes place, and we follow up and track some outcome measures. And this is, in case you're not familiar, the Healthy Homes approach is based on these seven principles: keep it dry, clean, safe, well-ventilated, pest-free, contaminant-free, well-maintained. So the program is also driven by, what we find in the clinic, as well as relevant near neighborhood exposures. We have a GIS component there. We obtain some key measurements, particle counts, humidity, measures of ventilation and other things. And so what we found so far is, of course, active involvement of our partners has been really obviously important, both for, developing the intervention, developing our role and kind of finding our niche, but then also and getting our referral network. And so we've also been learning a lot from existing models. For example, Children's Mercy in Kansas City, Seattle King County have been incredibly helpful and provided additional training and answered many questions. And we're also building from existing platforms and partnerships. And although this environmental health clinic is new, there are still, we have plenty of partners in our community that were, for example, the UT Occupational Medicine, that division, as well as, there are others within Baylor, Harris Health, and Texas Children's Hospital, the City and County Lead and Healthy Homes programs, other community partners. And so I guess we're getting into some of our challenges. Developing the instruments has been very time-intensive, and it can be difficult to get a big group of people to agree on a set of questions, as you might imagine. And, there's a tension, of course, between wanting to have a manageable instrument and one maybe that's comparable across cities, but then also, there's so many different ways, you want to get a lot of information when you have this opportunity. And then we're also finding, our bioinformatics people want essentially, kind of yes-no questions or drop-down menus where, oftentimes what you really need is a text response in order to kind of gather the information you want, but doesn't go well into a database. And we have a variety. So we have several members of staff that are, involved with collecting the data. And in order to, kind of standardize how we do it, we have scripts and provide training, which has also been pretty resource intensive. And we're collecting a lot of data. And I think at first we had planned to integrate more of it within the medical record system, within Epic. And we're finding that it takes a long time to get things into the medical record system, and it's also not very user-friendly. It's not easy to access that information. It's not a good place to store the information. But we have found our bioinformatics and biostatistics people at our institution to be incredibly helpful. They are working on a pipeline that will eventually link, so some of the data from the medical record will be, I guess, linked into their data management system. So to the extent possible, we have been working to leverage our clinical and research efforts to help, to share, the time of our people. We also have been relying heavily on our community advisory board as well, both for offering different perspectives and maybe adding some questions to our questionnaires or changing how we ask the questions, but then also establishing trust within the community. We do home interventions, and so it's can be difficult to just get in the door, and so just having this group on our side has been incredibly helpful, including one of our members is a pretty well-known pastor in our region, and so someone like that has a huge list of contacts, which he's been really open with in sharing. So we partner strategically with the city. For example, they have a Medicaid 1115 waiver that's been will be helpful to many of our clients. We're cross-training personnel to provide backup and increase the continuity of care. Personnel has been a bit of a challenge for us, both recruiting people with the interest and skill set that we need. For example, hiring a nurse practitioner, that was quite a challenge. Finding someone who's really interested in this community medicine, the approach, what we're doing, and then sticking with us because, it's not easy as you're developing a new program. I'm not sure she had any idea what she was getting into when she joined us, but in terms of personnel, another issue we've had is turnover, not within our staff, but within, for example, the first time we went with Harris Health, we got just wonderful support, and then, several weeks later, the person who had, voiced all the support left suddenly, and we didn't have anything in writing, and so what we're finding is, we need to be prepared for that kind of turnover. We need to make sure that we do have things in writing, because in order, so we don't have to start off at square one again. We have also had a bit of a challenge with filling our template, that is getting referrals. So we just haven't been out there for very long, which is the main thing. And so I think once we're still working on getting the word out using, with our partners. And I think once we, have more patients go through the system and we're able to share, share the outcomes, I think we'll be doing much better there. We'll soon start getting referrals directly from a health plan, so that will be referring, increasing our referrals quite a bit, or filling our template. Our home-based services, we find when we get in the home, once we get there, another issue we're having is no-shows in the clinic, and which is common across the system, but it's something that's been affecting us as well. Just gaining trust in the home has been, it's going to be a challenge anytime you're doing, you're going into your client's home. We've also, found just a great need. For example, one family we're working with, they've got, I believe there are 6 children, and 4 of them sleep on the couch in the living room. There's no food in the refrigerator. There are just so many other needs. And so the, what we were there for was just kind of one piece of the puzzle, but we do the best we can to refer to additional community resources whenever possible. And then reimbursement for these home-based services is something that's still, across the country, groups are working on this. That's something that we've made a lot of progress, but there's more to go. So everything is just taking a lot longer than we had, than we had envisioned, but we're really excited where we are, and if you have any questions, So we have several people who are trained to do that. We have a community health worker, a nurse, and environmental hygienist. And so we're all trained and, certified healthy home specialists, that sort of thing. It's not an extensive home. It's mainly a visual assessment with just some very brief measurements. We do some. It's just, we look, we have a moisture meter, we have carbon monoxide levels and carbon dioxide particle counts. We don't do, 24-hour sampling or anything like that. It's just a kind of a spot Yeah, our city does have a healthy homes program, but they're not currently getting reimbursed for the lead investigation, a small amount. We are working on getting reimbursement. Health Plan has agreed that they will reimburse for our services, although we haven't worked out the details. As I understand it, Texas is further ahead than many other states in getting reimbursement for this, but we don't still haven't worked out all the details. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In that, it's great that this activity of looking at it can prevent and save money.
Right.
And there's also looking at the clinical where people come in and they're ill and everything, and then you're going back to see what happened at the home. Rather than doing the prevention where you look at healthy people, you do that in medicine, you look at healthy people.
We do partner closely with the city and county health departments. We go out into homes with them. But I just want to say that we also, I hate this term, but we're kind of addressing the kind of low-hanging fruit in working with those with poorly controlled asthma and doing that home environmental assessment with them. So this is a kind of like a pronged effort in that working to just educate. So we are involved in just community education and professional education. And something I envision us doing more of is working to integrate environmental health into the home visits that others do. For example, there's a nurse family partnership at Baylor where they have people go out into the home and they're working with new moms or pregnant moms I'd like to provide healthy homes training for them so that on all those visits, can extend our reach. We are a small group. We're just really working with, the small percentage of people, and so ways in which we can,
I guess that's my question. It's a small group. It's expensive.